Hello, and welcome to Living Open, an ever-evolving podcast for mystics and seekers here to help you come back home to you. I'm your host, Erin. I am a creative, a healer, a witch, and I am so glad that you are here. Happy October, happy Libra season. Fall, I feel like, is my time to shine, so I feel like I really thrive starting with Virgo season. Even though technically it's summer, but I really start to feel into those fall vibes, so I am happy. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you probably heard me talk about being a Libra sun. So I thought I'd spend a moment talking about what being a Libra means to me since we're in Libra season. I'm a Libra sun in the second house, conjunct my Mercury in Libra as well. Can you hear it in how I talk? So Libra's justice card. I think my big struggle as a Libra has been being unclear of where I'm believing something because it's actually true versus what I'm believing because I wish it was true or it's what I want to see. I think Libras are a pretty optimistic bunch, and I am too, and that's I feel like my big Libra problem. To me, being a Libra, of course, is intrinsically tied to social justice. It's about creating peace. And I think how that manifests for me is really keeping the peace between friends, being that holder of balance, and also a lot of people pleasing. Other very Libra things I think that show up for me are, always trying to find that balance. So balancing between listening and speaking, between healing myself and offering healing work to others, balancing myself with partners, pulling dualities within me and sometimes opposing needs together. Bringing people together is a big one for me as well. Obviously with this podcast, with my classes, with my events, with my groups, I've always loved being a connector of people, and that's very Libra to me. I also feel like a lot of my journey has been evolving through partnership and relationship, and evolving by exploring my polar sign Aries, which is also my moon sign. I'm a full moon baby, so I have my sun and moon are polarities. And so exploring that polar sign Aries has looked like exploring independence, freedom, solo travel. That's been huge for my spiritual growth, literally traveling all over the world. And needing that balance, again, Libra, of evolving both alone and with someone else. Like, my relationships have been a huge catalyst for my journey, but so have my solo work, my solo adventures. So yeah, very Libra. So feel into the vibes of this season. Next week's episode is with Jeff Hinshaw, creator of Brooklyn Fools and the Cosmic Cousins astrology podcast that I am obsessed with. And I'm sure we're going to be getting into Libra season then, so stay tuned for that. We're recording it this Friday, and it'll be out on Monday, so a week from now if you're listening to this on the day it comes out. And I also wanted to say that I recently realized that my Jupiter and Scorpio in the third house, the Gemini house, is basically blowing up and magnifying communication, Gemini, around darkness, mysticism, the occult, Scorpio. So hello, this podcast, all my teaching, literally everything I do makes so much sense. And I just love seeing how my life is reflected in my chart and how I learn and grow more in astrology and come into my chart even more. It's just really fascinating to me. So today's guest, I have Amy Koretsky on the podcast. Amy is a wellness coach for mind, body, and business. She's a creative entrepreneur, and she does a lot of work around balancing your health with your hustle, which is also the name of her podcast, Health Fuels Hustle. Her work is focused on helping female-identified and non-binary business owners heal what needs healing. And when she's not leading breathwork or reading tarot, she is working as an acupuncturist at Constellation Acupuncture and Healing Arts, the Chinese medicine clinic in downtown Minneapolis that she co-owns. She is leading wellness retreats in Joshua Tree, California. I know she just got back from one of those. And she loves to hike in the woods with her dog, Juniper. So I found Amy personally because we started following each other on Instagram, and I ended up joining her Patreon and doing a breathwork circle with her, which we get into in this episode, and it was just so powerful. So I'm really excited to share her with you. In this episode, we talk about, of course, decolonizing her healing practice, exchange in business, advice for holding supportive space for people, what my personal breathwork practice looks like, the resistance that can come up a lot with breathwork, the power of breathwork for both of us, her Reiki quote-unquote confession and why she doesn't connect with Reiki, how her tarot practice combines with breathwork, connecting with tarot archetypes and embodying them with breathwork, her current tarot teacher, how she relates to Leo energy as a Leo sun, and a bunch more. Before we get into it, I want to share an excerpt from Amy's most recent newsletter. She literally said exactly what I was feeling, and I immediately replied and was like, can I please share this on the episode? I've personally been feeling a lot of fraudy feelings coming up recently, and it's been super triggering. Just feeling like, who am I to do this work? Who the fuck do I think I am? I'm not, you know, worthy enough, good enough, experienced enough, old enough. That's been a big one for me, old enough. Whatever enough to help other people. I should just quit everything and just crawl into my bed. So I've been holding space for that and sitting with that and feeling what it feels like and recognizing that it's the contraction following the expansion. It's the devil following temperance. It is the contraction that's following a lot of really amazing expansive things happening for me in this work, like teaching more and more classes and events at places I used to dream about teaching at, about being interviewed for the newspaper here in Philly, about more and more thousands and thousands of people listening to the show. It's just, this contraction is about growing beyond what I'm comfortable with. And that's just it. It feels uncomfortable. So I'm just sitting with that. And being gentle with myself. And there's also, of course, this added aspect of this collective contraction and triggering trauma. And I'm not going to get into that here because I know we've all been in it. And I don't think there's anything else I have to say about that than what I've already said or read that somebody else has said. So first of all, if you're feeling that, coming back to these fraudy feelings, you're not alone. And I'm going to read what Amy wrote in her newsletter. So she says, this week has been like a whirlwind, and I know I'm not the only one feeling it. High highs, low lows, and a swirl of feelings in between. It's been a few weeks since I popped into your inbox, and it's not just because I was in the California desert. I've been on the quieter side lately because I've been having a bout of fraudy feelings, worried that I have nothing of substance to say, that I'm shouting into the void. For every expansion, there is a subsequent contraction. And I've been going through a series of up-leveling expansions the past few months, including one hell of a jump in Joshua Tree. So here I am, in this moment, shrinking back into myself like a rubber band that's been stretched further than its comfort zone. You might be feeling the push-pull of expansion contraction too. So how am I working with/through these fraudy feelings? I'm reminding myself that fraudy feelings come from the part of my brain/ego that's mainly concerned with keeping me safe and small. This part isn't concerned with what's actually true, it's concerned with what feels true to it. To move past our fraudy feelings is to move from what we fear is true to what we know is true. So I decided to gently call out my brain/ego on its bullshit this morning by sitting down, writing out a list of things that I know to be true. 1, I feel better when I move my body in the morning. 2, pulling tarot cards helps me sort through all my messy thoughts. 3, I feel deeply connected to the universe when I'm guiding people through breathwork. 4, writing doesn't always come easily to me, but I'm proud of what I write. 5, committing to a regular morning practice is hard for me, but I feel more calm and centered throughout my day when I do it. After adding a few more things to my list, I knew what I needed to do. I moved my body, pulled a few tarot cards, and sat down to write this email. I won't jump to the conclusion that I magically moved through my fraudy feelings with a simple list. I know they'll pop up again here and there this week, but I do know that coming back to what I know is true for me helped me in this moment and might even help you too. That really resonated with me, and that's why I wanted to share it with you. This is me talking again, not reading the newsletter anymore, if that was unclear. So I'm sitting with that, and I'm leaning into this contraction and giving myself a little extra love and gentle care as I do it. So a reminder for you to do that as well if you're feeling this. A couple more things before we get into the interview. As you know, this show is brought to you by Patreon. So shout out to all my lovely supporters and a special thank you to this week's new supporters. I'm so sorry if I mispronounce your names. Feel free to send me a note if I do and I will reshout you out next week. But Julia Langer, Amanda Oliveira, and Anna Rosen, who is at Blind Love Tarot on Instagram. I am so grateful for all of you for supporting this work on Patreon. I'm so in love with the community and healing work we're creating together there. You can join as well if you'd like to support the show, get monthly embodied tarot yoga classes, connect over new moon community circles, join our book club, do breathwork, and more. So you can check that out at patreon.com/Erin Johnson. Of course, the link is in the description. And Philly people, I have a lot of really amazing classes and events going on that I'm excited about. So if you're in the area, come check them out. You can find them all at living-open.com/events, but I just want to say a couple things that I'm starting a breathwork and Reiki class at Vitality Meditation in Fishtown every Wednesday at 7 p.m. We do breathwork, then you relax, and you get lots of Reiki. I teach a restorative yoga and Reiki class at Haven Wellness every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. That's in Old Kensington. Really relaxing, a beautiful reset for your nervous system, for your energy body. A special vocal sound bath immersion and Reiki healing journey at Vitality Meditation is happening on Wednesday, October 17th at 7 p.m. I am doing all the Reiki healing and I'm partnering with a lovely human, Luna, who is going to be playing crystal singing bowls and singing. So, oh, a couple more things. Sorry, I'm doing a lot of events and I'm really excited about all of them. So if you're not in Philly, bear with me. I'm almost done. I do a monthly Reiki circle at the Common Room, and this month's circle is this Thursday. If you're listening to this on, what day is this even coming out? Monday. If you're listening to this on Monday the 8th, the Reiki circle is on Thursday the 11th. And I'm also teaching Queen of Swords embodied tarot yoga at Palo Santo Wellness in South Philly. And that's on Sunday, October 14th, 5 p.m. So a lot of stuff going on. That isn't even everything. So yeah, that's at living-open.com/events. I'm also working on a Living Open Scorpio Edition zine that will be available digitally for free to all Patreon supporters. And I'll probably put it up as a digital copy on my site that you can buy, definitely as a physical copy, because I love getting physical mail and physical zines, so I want to offer it as that. But yeah, it'll be launching on the first day of Scorpio season, which is very soon, and I'm really excited because I've always been a writer, and I've been feeling really called to write more and more and to share that with you. So this zine has a bunch of stuff in it, including some candle magic, a simple spell for abundance, tips for telling your family you're a witch, a note on simplifying, tips for unblocking creativity, a restorative yoga practice for the astrology of the rest of the year, a tarot spread to connect with the King of Cups, who is the court card representation of Scorpio, entering the Death card, calling back your power, tarot spread to check in on your relationship with death, a channeled love note, a cord cutting and forgiveness ritual, and more. So stay tuned for that. That was a lot of announcements. But yeah, let's get into the interview now. And I always start just by kind of having you share your story, however feels present for you, to getting to where you are now.
Yeah. Oof, storytelling. Okay. So my name is Amy Koretsky. For those of you that don't know me, Koretsky can be a hard name to pronounce, as it's like a completely Ashkenazi Jewish Russian name. And so a lot of people just call me Amy K. And, you know, my story starts out as me as a child wanting to be an artist. So I had an older brother and sister that were like a half brother and sister from my dad's first marriage. And so my siblings are about 15 years older than I am. So like significantly older. So I remember being really, really young and having them be in like high school and college, and they were both very artistic, and not that they've necessarily like brought it forward into their lives now, but I remember them drawing, and my sister would always make these cool collages and all this awesome stuff. And from the earliest age that I can remember, I would tell people that I was going to be an artist when I grew up. And so this sort of like creative thread has really started from like the very beginning of my life. And as I got older, my parents really nurtured that aspect of me, which I'm incredibly grateful for. I did a lot of art classes and photography and, you know, ceramics and like everything. And then I got into high school, and the, you know, the systems that we have that like are basically here to, you know, herd us like cattle into different arenas of the world, basically made me feel like my creativity was like not valued, and that I didn't actually have any skills. And I had like tried doing like AP credit for art and didn't get the like score that you needed to get AP credit. And it basically crushed me. Like, I remember it as a very like specific moment in my life of feeling crushed and being like, oh, this isn't what I can do with my life anymore. And then having to like figure out something else. And I ended up going to school for art history and working in some like really well-known, amazing, wonderful museums, but like always knowing that this wasn't actually what I was meant to be doing. And then, fast forward to when I was in my early 20s, and I got very, very, very sick, like so sick that I couldn't hold a job. I couldn't even live on my own anymore. I had to move back home and live with my parents and go to the Mayo Clinic. Ended up getting diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And basically through that experience, like, which was a very like tower moment. I know that a lot of your listeners understand tarot archetypes, yeah, and that you're a tarot reader and I'm a tarot reader. And so like that was a tarot moment or a tower moment for me of total destruction and having to like start from the ground up again for me. And through that, I really rebuilt who I was from the ground up. And a lot of that ended up having to do with healing myself, and through that process, learning how to like heal other people. So then I, from there, kind of ended up going to graduate school for acupuncture and Chinese medicine. And from there, a long and windy road brought me to where I am here today of doing breathwork healing and tarot reading. I'm a nationally certified health and wellness coach and an acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist.
Yeah, you do so many things, and you're based in Minneapolis, which I feel like I've heard so many cool things about Minneapolis, but I've never been, and now I really want to visit.
There's a lot of really cool witches here in Minneapolis, so yeah, you're more than welcome to join us anytime you want.
Thank you. I need to get over to the future. That's where I want to check it out.
Well, the future is actually where I first heard of you, because I was, Lacey, who runs the future, is a friend of mine, and I was over there hanging out and shopping, and I saw your, like, bring your woo-woo to the protest.
Oh my God, you have it next to you.
And I saw that, and I was like, oh, that sounds amazing. That's exactly what I need right now as I, you know, I'm on this quote unquote journey of really decolonizing my own practice, and also unpacking my own like racism and all these things that were just kind of like brought up with that we didn't really realize were a part of us until our eyes have been opened, or at least for me, my eyes have been opened recently. And so I heard of you that way. And then like right after that, Tess had posted that they did an interview with you, and I was like, oh, wow, synchronicity. And then I was like, oh, Erin's awesome. Great.
I love Tess. Yeah, that was such a fun interview.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you found my book. And let's talk about this. Let's talk about decolonizing your healing practice. As you know, this is something that I'm working with also. So what is that looking like for you now? Is there anything you want to share around that?
Yeah. Mm. There's so many things I want to share about it. I need to figure out where I want to start. So I would say that decolonizing my healing practice is something that I will be very honest and say it's only been within the last year that I've really started to even realize that that was something that needed to be done, let alone actually starting to do it. Between re-examining what tools I want to use in my practice, I guess to like kind of backtrack a little bit and give a little history. I was born and raised Jewish. I was pretty active in the Jewish community when I was like younger and up until maybe my early teens. And then around my early teens, when I kind of had my feminist awakening, I was like, wow, this is actually really fucked up in a lot of ways, like from a woman's perspective or someone that identifies as a woman. And I had a lot of issues with the theology of Judaism and even with the practice of Judaism. And I kind of ended up having a lot of like internal anti-Semitism even that I kind of took on over the years. I refuse to ever date Jewish guys. Like, I'm heterosexual, so I date guys, and I refuse to ever date Jewish guys when I was younger. I like refuse to go to synagogue anymore or like really take part in any of the Jewish holidays and all this stuff. And I felt very strongly about it. And then as I was older and getting more into healing practices and very deeply felt this need of like being drawn towards spirituality again, but like not having my own practice of spirituality that I felt comfortable drawing upon. I might, like a lot of other people, ended up like taking on spiritual practices of other cultures that was not mine to take on. So things like, you know, using sage and, you know, like all these different things that now don't feel comfortable because that's not at all like where my people have been and what they've done. And only within the last maybe, I don't know, like 4 or 5, 6 months have I started to rework my relationship with Judaism and like take on the parts of it that actually do feel good for me and let go of the parts that don't. And I've been reading some really amazing books out there of these you know, female priestesses basically from Judaism. And like, there's this new group of people that has, I think, come out in the last, you know, 10 years or so that take a lot of the earth-based spiritual practices and some of the Judaism practices and really bring them together into something somewhat new. It's a conglomeration. And that actually does feel really good for me. So I'm starting to dip my toe back into those waters and reconnect with, like, you know, using, you know, like candles are something that's used in like every spiritual practice basically ever, where like, you know, candles aren't something that you're like, oh, that's just this one culture. And so reconnecting with my use of candles and like honey and some of the like spicy herbs that we use during like Havdalah service in Judaism. And you know, I'm Ashkenazi, so all of my people are from like Ukraine and Russia and like that Eastern European. And so really doing my research and reconnecting with some of the herbs and the rituals that they used over there. And so it's been a really long and interesting practice for my own spirituality of like not just reconnecting with what my ancestors did, but even acknowledging that that's a practice that I want to connect with.
Mm, yeah. That's really interesting. And I have to say that I'm not there yet in the terms of like coming back from a complete rejection of like the religion I was raised with. I was raised like Baptist Christian. Like my family, my parents, grandparents, all of them are very like conservative religious Christian. And I have not yet come to a point where I'm like, let me see what is good here. Yeah, because that's hard.
And so where are your ancestors from? Like, granted, they're Baptist and whatever, but like where location-wise are they from?
So originally, a long time ago, Ireland, Germany, France, and England. So I've been sort of reconnecting with like Celtic witchcraft and looking at like, okay, Christianity is literally like the religion of colonizers. And like before Christianity came to these places, like, what were my ancestors practicing and, you know, earth-based spirituality, witchcraft, and what were their traditions?
Totally.
Yeah, that's been feeling really healing. And I'm very much in the middle of that now, sort of diving in.
And that's kind of how I started. So I actually started before I was even like looking into some of these more, you know, like feminine earth-based Judaism practices. I was looking at Russian practices, specifically like Russian witchcraft, because that's like where my people are from. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that a lot of Russian witchcraft, or from the reading that I've done, obviously it is not like complete because I've only dipped my toe in the water, but a lot of the readings that I was doing, it was very connected to Russian Orthodoxy, which is, you know, a more a Christian Catholic. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, it's sort of, I remember learning about this in like history class in high school.
Right. Like, and so that didn't quite like align with me. And it made me realize that as like an Ashkenazi Jew, you know, yes, I can connect with location. Yes, I connect with Russia. Yes, I can connect with Ukraine. But really, like, Ashkenazi, like, culture is, like, it's, like, that's the identity. It's not an identity of, like, being a Russian. It's an identity of being, like, an Ashkenazi Jew. And even then, like, you know, a lot of Jews weren't really considered to be, like, Russian. They were, like, Jewish first and Russian second. Mm-hmm. And so it's been And so that kind of is what was like, all right, well, this is something I need to face. This is something I need to like work on. Yeah. And, you know, I'm lucky because recently there have been other, you know, prominent, like well-known in the witchy world, people that also have this background. And so I've been like talking to them more. And I recently had somebody reach out and connect with me that was originally from here, but had been living out in California, is now moving back to Minnesota. And like, we've reconnected, and they're someone that I can like have these conversations with because they're also from the same background. And I feel like there are more Jews now that have some of the same beliefs that I have. And so it can be a more open dialogue versus when I was growing up, I felt very alienated in this.
Yeah. I feel like that's the story of a lot of us. And then like we get out into the world and like the community of the internet is so expansive and we're so lucky to have it. And then we can see that maybe everything doesn't have to be as strict or as dogmatic or as small as we thought it did when we were growing up in like, well, I'm from a small town. I don't know about you, but in our small towns.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and along with the whole decolonizing thing, I mean, that's maybe decolonizing my like personal spiritual practice, but there's still the like act of decolonizing my like professional spiritual practice. Yes. Because like the way that I make, you know, 99.9% of my income is through acupuncture, through like, and breath work. And we can talk about this later with the breath work, because technically this style of breath work is like originates with David and whatnot. And we can get into this because you've trained with him too. But, you know, breath work in general is still like pranayama, you know, that has some roots in that, which is based in more like Ayurvedic practices. And with acupuncture, it's, you know, from Chinese culture. And so there was a lot of work that I've been doing both personally and then also with my business partner, because I co-own the acupuncture clinic with another amazing woman who's very much has similar aligned values as I do around this. And these are conversations that we have openly and often like in our clinic with our employees. And it's been a big process for us to like, as we're working on unpacking racism and decolonizing our practice, but also owning up to the fact that like, this is our business too. And this is how we are making a living, and trying to both honor the fact that like, we did study with like elders in, you know, the Chinese medicine community. Like some of my favorite teachers are, you know, learned from their grandparents and stuff. So in some ways I feel comfortable with it. And in other ways, I still feel very uncomfortable with it. And at the same time, something that I try to remember is that like, I personally, and like in our clinic, we don't practice classical Chinese medicine. We practice traditional Chinese medicine. And what the difference in that is like traditional classical Chinese medicine is kind of like what has been forever and ever, you know, for many thousands of years, versus traditional Chinese medicine is what like Chairman Mao during that, like that time of communism, when they were, what do you want to ever call it? Like, you know, bringing, it was a way of like bringing classical Chinese medicine in a systemized way to the people. And so in some ways, it's kind of like that country systemized it in this way to specifically even like bring it forward in this like greater Western way. So it's kind of an interesting like argument to like think about that way too. So there's just a lot of things that we're constantly having conversations about in our clinic.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's so important, not just for you personally, but when it gets to the point where like we're making money, like we're making a living off of these things, like we need to be asking these questions. Like it's not an option not to, because we can't be making money in a way that's perpetuating harm. Like regardless, we're existing in this violent system, but we can do as little harm as possible. And like when we're asking these questions and examining our practices, like that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, and specifically like around that whole making money thing, like one of the things that we are doing is like, cause I can talk about business for like ever and ever and ever. And
yeah, I want to talk about this.
Okay. Well, and when we set up our business, we followed a specific sort of like financial system so that we would, where it's almost like the old school, like envelope method, you know, like when maybe your grandparents would like cash their paycheck and like put this amount in the grocery envelope and this amount in the rent envelope or whatever. Mm-hmm. We have a similar system, but it's not like cash based like that. But so we basically, for every dollar that comes in, like a certain percentage goes to this, a certain percentage goes to that, a certain percentage goes to this, so we always know we have our bases covered for where we need them. And what we're doing is like a certain percentage of every dollar that comes in, we have that goes back to the community. And what we used to do is like every month we were kind of giving it to different organizations. And what we've decided recently to do is to actually have all of it always go to an organization that helps local Chinese immigrants. And so that we're kind of giving back to, like, kind of doing reparations in that way for this.
Hell yeah. I love that. That's so great.
Yeah.
What you're saying is making me think of how you frame, like, money on your site as exchange. And I love this idea, and I think it's really interesting. And most people, I feel like, are not doing it. Or even if we're thinking of money in this way as, like, an energetic exchange, it's not really, like, put out there in the same way. And so I'm curious if you could just speak to that a little bit, like, what that means to you and why you've chosen to frame it like that.
Yeah. I will say that was not my original idea. I will give credit where credit is due.
David Elliott?
Actually, no. David too, but actually before that, Kathleen Shannon, I don't know if you know her.
Oh, I'm Being Boss.
Yeah, so she's a really good friend of mine, and like that's where that original idea came from. It was like,
I didn't know that.
How do you think of money? And it's like, think of it as energy, and it is this exchange. And, mm-hmm. You know, money is something that I've always like, had issues with. I grew up in a family that had our needs met. We were, you know, like upper middle class. And I didn't like it. Like, I don't know. It felt icky to me in some ways. Like growing up, I shunned the religion I was brought into. I shunned, you know, my family that I was brought into the wealth that I was brought into, and very much put myself in the position of that sort of like punk DIY mentality.
Yeah.
And as I was starting my business, was still very much stuck in that like kind of money is bad mentality. And so had my rates really low, which is not a bad thing. I don't think it's bad to like have your rates low, but I was having my rates really low and feeling weird about like people I knew using like coming and getting acupuncture for me, because then I had to like ask them for money, and it was like this whole thing. I was like, this is only as weird as you make it, which is another thing that Kathleen often says. It's like, okay, well, I'm making it weird by like having these weird feelings attached to it. And so I had to do a lot of my own work, which I mostly used tapping for, to like get over some of my money issues, because like I was feeling exhausted after, like I was feeling really drained, and it's like, okay, I'm doing this work that I love, why am I feeling so terrible all the time? And I realized that the exchange was off. Like I was giving a lot and I didn't feel like I was getting in return. Not that it always needs to be money that you're getting in return, but I did feel like the energy exchange was off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where it all came from. And, you know, now I very much believe that the energy exchange doesn't have to be equal one-to-one, like person to person, but it does have to be equal in a larger scope of things. And what I mean by that is like believing in sliding scale system. So like for one person, I might be giving more than they're able to give back, but for another person, they're giving back like more than they maybe would need to. And so it's kind of in this larger, if you like pull back and see it from like a wider landscape lens, then there is this like more evenness to it instead of these like highs and lows all the time.
Yes. Thank you for articulating that. That's something that I think about, but I didn't exactly have the words for it, but like, I do feel like I charge, like there are my rates on my site and everything, but then like the work that people pay me in full to do allows me to like teach a free yin and reiki class every week with no money attached to that, but like I'm able to make money in other ways so I can give also, and that is really important.
Yeah, I was helping a friend set up her massage business recently, and she's someone that's really active and committed to activist circles here in Minneapolis, and she's been doing sliding scale for a long time, but we were like bringing her offerings online so that she would have online scheduling, because like one of the things that was draining her was like this constant email and texting communication with everyone, like trying to align schedules. And so we were like, all right, we're going to systemize this. And basically what we came up with is, I forget how she named the three tiers, but the idea was like, there is this lowest tier where like support was needed. Like the person, you know, didn't have the financial means to pay like her full rate. So like a support is needed sort of rate. And then there was like, quote unquote, her true rate, like what her, you know, like if money wasn't an issue and everyone had enough money, like this is what she basically needs to cover her costs and like make the profit that she needs to make for her own living. And then we had a rate higher than that. That's like a pay it forward rate. And so it's like, you know, when you're feeling abundant financially, then you like pay that rate, because, you know, we've all been there. I've been in times where I'm feeling financially abundant, so I will like give more than I need to in finances to somebody else. And then there's been times where I'm like not at all financially abundant and feeling feeling pulled thin. And so being able to have that range there. But sometimes the sliding scale like can feel intimidating to the client purchasing, which is why I really love this like three-tier model, because then there's not this like, oh gosh, are they gonna like think negative of me if I like don't give enough, or like, you know, where do I land on this scale? And there's this anxiety that can be brought on. And so just by saying like, here are the three tiers, and like wherever you feel like you fit on that tier, like that's great. And there's no judgments attached. And it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it for the client. And they're just like, all right, right here, right now, this is the tier I'm at.
Yeah. I know Tess talked about this on my podcast. Maybe they talked about it on yours as well, but just how we need to make sure that there's no shame attached to sliding scale, or else people aren't going to take it.
Yeah. And I feel like that, you know, the thing with shame is like more often than not, like we're shaming ourselves more than somebody else is shaming us. So like we can say like, oh, well, like no shame, like just take whatever you want on the sliding scale. But there's actually like systems that we can put in place that really help eliminate that, so that, because we can say it till the cows come home, but still, you know, shame is insidious and it shows up all the time. And so the more that we can do as the provider to eliminate the options of shame of even like coming up, the better.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you know who this person is. I listen to so many podcasts that I get them all like, you know, confused, but Asali Earthwork, she was talking about how her system is set up like that. And it's labeled like sun, moon, and stars.
Yeah, that actually might have been on my podcast that you heard that.
Yeah, okay.
So I think she's
like the dream, freedom, beauty. Was it healthy?
Totally.
Yeah, which I just really love.
Yeah, I love the I remember telling her how much I love the naming of that, because it was like taking away any judgment of like, oh, I need support, or I have a lot of support. And it was just like,
they're all beautiful things.
Totally.
And this is making me want to talk to you about holding space for people in healing spaces, because all of this work that you do in breath work, and I don't know anything about acupuncture, but I assume acupuncture also, and coaching, there's a lot of space that you have to hold. And so do you have any advice for people around that, around creating safe space?
First off, like, the word safe space is something that I used to use that term a lot. And recently someone brought it to my attention that it's impossible for us to guarantee safety for somebody else, because we don't know what makes them feel safe. And we also just can't guarantee, because we don't know what's necessarily going to trigger them or whatnot. And so two terms that I've heard recently that I've really loved and have been trying to incorporate more in my own copy are supportive space. Because I can promise to always be supportive, even if I can't always promise like complete safety, and also brave space. So it's like showing up with bravery.
I love that.
I know, right? Aren't they beautiful?
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. So even in like the language that I'm trying to be really intentional about using, I feel is like one way that I try to hold space. So by saying things like, you know, this is a brave space or this is a supportive space, 100% grounding is like the number one key for me. If I'm feeling very rooted and very grounded, then I know that I can hold a larger container than when I'm feeling, I don't know, what's the opposite of grounded? When I'm feeling like, you know, like flighty or stressed out or
all in your head. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. So grounding has been a really big thing for me. And it was something that I had to kind of learn, not the hard way, but through process. You know, in the acupuncture clinic, I'm used to running two rooms at the same time. So sometimes I'll see like a person at 8 a.m. and then 8:30 and then 9 and 9:30. And so I'm like going back and forth between two rooms, and that totally works for me. And even though there's this like physical connection of touch and the energetic connection with the needle, I, for one reason or another, am like totally able to not take on other people's stuff when I'm treating them. Whereas with breath work and tarot and coaching in this like deeper, I mean, not that acupuncture doesn't get deep. It does get very deep sometimes. And a lot of people will have very significant transformative releases during it, which is really beautiful to hold space for. And that, but that, those sort of treatments do take more like holding of space than the average, like, all right, you come in every other week and we're working on your migraines and it's like the same sort of routine, you know, mm-hmm. versus when I'm like reading tarot and doing breath work and, you know, someone is telling me about childhood sexual abuse or about, you know, a recent parental figure that passed away, you know, like there's just much deeper, there's a deeper leaning of connection in those treatments than I sometimes have in my acupuncture treatments. And I realized that like, I can't go one after the other. Like, even though I'm in the clinic, I can't just have a treatment and have that person leave and then go to the next person. Like, I need 15 minutes minimum for me to, you know, run cold water over my hands and to take some deep breaths and maybe go outside and sit under the sun for a minute or put my ass on the ground or, you know, something like that, and discharge some of that, that even though I very much, as we're taught in breath work, like not taking on other people's stuff, it's inevitable that we take on some of that stuff and that it affects us because we're human. You know, like if it didn't affect us at all, we'd be robots.
Yeah.
And so I've learned that I really need to find time to ground myself both before and after treatments like that.
Yeah. I like, I know that's important. And I had an experience last week where I had been getting lazy with like my grounding and my protection. And I gave Reiki to like five people that day. And the next day I was a disaster. Like I was sad all day for no reason. And I was just like on the edge of tears all morning. And I was like, what is going on with me? And then I put it together and I was like, oh, of course. Like I just absorbed all this energy and I didn't do anything with it. Like I didn't release it in any way. So I did a long breathwork session. And then afterwards I was like, all right, I'm reborn. Like I am here. Everything is fine.
Can we talk about this for a second?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to know, because I'm a curious person and have my own podcast, so I'm used to asking the questions too. Yeah. What does your personal breathwork practice look like? And not necessarily like pranayama, like the yoga stuff you do, but like what this sort of breathwork that we do.
Yeah. I actually find the traditional pranayama really boring and I don't do it. It's not part of my practice. Like sometimes in my yoga classes, like we'll do a few minutes of it, but that's not really part of my personal practice anymore. Because, well, for many reasons, but it's just, it hasn't really been transformative for me. this kind of breath work, I've been doing it not very long, but since I did that training, I've been doing it about every day for a short amount of time. Not a long amount of time. We're talking like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because this kind of breath work is actually really intense for me. Like physically, it's been really difficult for me to breathe that way for a long period of time.
Does resistance come up for you? Because it comes, I mean, like I'm saying with so much love in my heart, because this is like me too, and I hold space for other people and I try to hold space for myself, but like resistance.
Yes. In the training when we, I mean, you know how it is, like we would have one of us laying down and our partner would be watching us and like holding space for us. And in one of the sessions afterwards, my partner was like, yeah, I told her that I felt like I was losing the breath a lot. And she was like, yeah, I could see that. But there were like two different ways that you were losing it. And it was like in the beginning where it seemed like this resistance was coming up. And I was like, yes, that was it. I was like choking on like on the breath in my chest. And then got through that as we started to get into it. And then she was like, and then it seemed like you would lose the breath and you would go somewhere. And I was like, yes. And that was the other piece. And that was actually my most transformative session of that whole weekend. And that's when I was like vibrating like crazy and just felt like I released so much stuff. But yeah, I get a lot of resistance to it. And I get resistance to it to even doing it. I'm like, oh, I don't want
That's where my resistance lies. Like so on my website, I have a free 7-day breathwork challenge that anyone can sign up for. And it is that like short sort of 10-minute style of breathwork. And basically every day you get a different, some journaling prompts and a playlist for just like this 12-minute breathwork. And so when I first launched that, like I did it with everyone else and it felt so amazing. And I was like, gosh, I need to be doing this like every day. Why don't I do this every day? And then, you know, I make excuses like, oh, I don't have time, or like my husband's downstairs and I don't want to like do this while he's in the house, or like, you know, whatever. But then the other day, it was my birthday the other day, and I went on my first solo camping adventure.
I saw that on Instagram.
Yeah, it was so amazing. I like rented this little cabin out in the woods, and it had been a while since I did like my own longer breathwork practice. I've like listened to some of my own recordings, and I've listened to some of Aaron's recordings that I've done before with Aaron, my teacher, Aaron Telford. But it had been a while, and I did one and it was like so great. And afterwards I was like, gosh, I really do need to do this more. Like I tell my clients that they need this more often. And I offer like monthly sessions for my Patreon community. Like I need monthly sessions for myself.
Yeah. The thing I love about it so much is it's like, you get to release all this stuff that's not mental at all. Like it's not tied to any, at least for me, it's not tied to any thoughts. It's just stuff that's living in my body from like things that I couldn't even connect the dots if I tried, just from like every microaggression and fear and tears that I couldn't cry, like all of these things, like they're still living inside of me from the time I was literally like 1 year old. And breathwork has it's just really helped me release all of that.
I think I've maybe shared this once before. I don't know if it was on my podcast or on a different one, but like one of the most powerful experiences for me with breathwork, I've had a couple of really powerful ones. Usually the like intensity and the amazingness comes during the like rest period afterwards for me. That's where I get like really intuitive downloads and like just tons of like messages. But the one time that it was incredibly powerful, like during the active breath, was like you said, I usually get a lot of tingling, mostly in my hands and around my mouth and like in my neck and stuff.
I get my hands so much too, especially my left hand.
Yeah. That's cool because the left hand is the one that's more connected to the heart. So that's interesting. But so for me, there was one time where I was like, you know, I talk to clients all the time that are doing this. I'm doing this with work with them consistently throughout the week. And a lot of people will say how they feel it in their belly or their legs. And for me, it's like never gone past my chest. Like it's always just been really high up. And like I mentioned earlier here with you, I have an autoimmune disease that affects my gut. And so I have chronic digestive issues. And basically what the disease is like my body was trying to eat itself. So like my intestines were like, would have holes in them and they were like trying to disintegrate. And so there's a lot of trauma in there that like, I know I haven't fully like processed both like, you know, mentally and emotionally and physically. And there was one time when I was doing breath work where like I could start to feel it in my gut and the like sensation and the vibration. And I was just like bawling at that point because I knew that like all of that, I guess you could say trauma, like, was starting to, like, process through there. And I was like, oh my God, this work is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Cause it's so simple, but it's so powerful. Yeah. And like, we all, like, you don't have to do anything to have this breath. Like, we just, you just use what you have. It's amazing.
I mean, one of my favorite things about this work is that it is, you know, if we want to talk about accessibility and like sliding scale models, it's like, well, you know, with breath work, like, yes, there is a benefit to having someone specifically hold space for you. Absolutely. But like I said, I did this out in the woods by myself. You do it every morning by yourself. Like, if you can teach someone how to do this breath, like, that's a tool that they have that they can take with them wherever they go. And it's like one of the most accessible means of potent healing that I've, like, one of literally the most potent healing that I've ever come across. And it's so accessible.
Yeah, it really is. This is, speaking of accessibility, this is one of the reasons that I always tell people, like, who get Reiki from me or come to one of my circles where I do Reiki, it's like the people who really love it. I'm like, if you have the means to do so, like, you should do just a Reiki 1 training. Like, you can give this to yourself because you can give it to yourself every day. And Reiki, before breathwork, I would say Reiki was the most transformative thing for me. And I still, I'm obsessed with Reiki still. Like, I still do it to myself every day. But
can I give you a confession?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I've done Reiki 1 and Reiki 2 training, and yeah. I don't know. It like doesn't connect with me for some reason or another. Like, I don't feel.
You're breaking my heart.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. This is why it's a confession. And I don't know if it's like, I don't know. I don't know if all of a sudden one day it's, something's just going to click and it's going to feel like, I mean, I know that it's working. Like, I can feel some things in my hands and I know, but like, I'll do it on clients sometimes after breath work and they're like, oh my God, I felt so much stuff. And like, they can feel it. But like, I, as the practitioner, feel like they're like, they'll be like, well, what did you feel? I'm like, I don't know. I just didn't feel anything. Like, I'm sorry.
My Reiki teacher was actually just talking about this the other day. And she, cause someone had mentioned that like, they didn't feel anything during the session, but the client was like, oh my God, that was amazing. All this stuff. And they were like, but I felt basically nothing. And she was like, yeah, sometimes that happens. That happened to me yesterday too. And this is a woman who's been, who's an amazing Reiki master, who's been doing this for, I don't even know how long, like 20 years. And she was like, yeah, that happened to me the other day. It's fine. Like, they're still having an experience, even if you're not feeling it.
Right. And I feel like there's something wrong with me. And I say that with like love, and I'm not like shaming myself. And I'm totally, I only do it on clients after breath work because I know that it's really powerful for them then. Mm-hmm. But like, we offer it as a service at the clinic, and I specifically took my name off of the calendar for that because I feel weird about offering it when like I don't, and Kim, my business owner, she loves doing Reiki. So like, I'm just like, that's your thing. I'm just
so that works. You. Yeah. Well, I think the thing is that like, we all have our practices that really resonate, and like, totally. Yeah, if Reiki doesn't resonate with you, like, I'm devastated, but that's fine. And yeah, maybe it'll circle back around and you'll be like, oh wait, that's how a lot of things happen for me. I feel like I am introduced to them. I learn a little bit. That's astrology for me right now. And then they circle back around and I'm like, oh wait, now I'm obsessed. And now I'm going to like dive all the way into it.
Totally. And I don't know if it's like, I mean, the woman that did my attunement, I did both my first and second attunements with her, and like, she's totally fine and she's great. She's been doing Reiki for a really long time. Like, she's a total master. She trains a bunch of people, but like, I also just feel like maybe this wasn't the right teacher for me, and that maybe when I'm ready to do my like third attunement, like the master one, that I'm going to find someone different and that something's going to change. But maybe that's also my brain just being like making excuses.
Okay, I have one more question. When you did your Reiki attunements, was it like just the attunement? Was it like a couple of days thing, or was it like a course that was sort of spread out over weeks?
It was like a long weekend. No, we did, I think both for Reiki 1 and Reiki 2, it was like 2 weekends in a row.
Oh, okay. Okay. I always tell people that like my Reiki 2 class that I've done has been 3 months, and yeah. Like the Reiki 1 was a month. And personally, I feel like I've gotten a deeper connection with Reiki just because we have to use it like constantly. We have like homework to do, and like you get to go deeper with it. So that's really helped me develop that.
I 100% agree with you. And I will also say that like, you know, as part of owning up and like calling myself out when it comes to this whole decolonizing my spiritual practice, like I did not decide to do a Reiki attunement for the right reasons. Like I 100% was like, oh, adding another tool to my toolbox, you know, sort of thing. Like this was my first Reiki attunement was years ago. Mm-hmm. And I will 100% call myself out on that, that it was, I did not have proper acknowledgement and ownership of the medicine. I did, had only ever had Reiki myself like a handful of times. And that was like several years prior. Like it, I did it for the wrong reasons. And I think that as, you know, as I move forward, if I decide to do the master level, like it's going to be for a different reason.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And if you do it again, then you'll know, and you'll be coming from a really different place.
Right. So I don't know. And it's like, you know, different, like with breath work, like I chose to do it because it completely 180 degree changed my life. And so I was like, this is something that I have to do now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that's always what the most powerful healing comes from.
Yeah. So what was your, very first breathwork experience, the circle that you did with me online?
Yes. Well, that was my first in this style of breathwork. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, I interviewed Aaron Telford, whose podcast I was just editing this morning. And just from meeting both of you and doing the breathwork, I was like, okay, I'm in. I'm in. I'm doing the training. Like, I'm going all in because that's what I do. I'm like, I love this thing. Let me just like learn every single thing I can about it and practice as much as possible.
Yeah. So can I ask you like what, because it's interesting, you know, as part of this idea of like accessibility in this work is I think it's so amazing that like when I do my online breathwork circles, it's like, here I am, I'm in my office, you're all at home. It's as many of you as want to join. And we're all just sitting on Zoom and I'm not touching you. I'm not putting oils on you or like burning incense around you or any of the things that I maybe do in my clinic for like my one-on-one, you know, in Minneapolis patients. But it's still as potent of medicine. And like, can you at all share with us what your first experience was like in that circle with me? Because like, I think it's so cool that like distance doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And I have people ask me about distance tarot reading sometimes and they're like, how do you know that it works? And I'm like, it just does. Like, I don't have an explanation. It just, I know it does. But yeah, that experience, I feel like I could just really feel the group energy, like even though we're all apart, and it was more powerful for me than any of like sessions that I just do by myself, because it's not that same, there's not that same support there that you can feel. And that was like where I was feeling resistance to it was just when we were getting started with the breath. And I'm like, when I do this breath, I want to quit. Like, I don't know how many minutes through, but like at some point I hit this wall and I'm like, is it over yet? Like, this is hard.
Totally.
Yeah. And then when I get past that, it's like, oh, that's where like the real actual work begins. And that's where it starts to become really powerful. And that's where I first experienced that sort of vibration in my body, which I don't feel in other kinds of breathwork. Like other kinds of breathwork, I think are powerful for me for other things, but that sort of vibration and just feeling after it's over, that I've really been like cleaned out, like scrubbed out from the inside. Like that's how I really felt.
It is like an emotional scrub brush.
Yes.
Just like really gets in there and like gets in all the crevices and it's going to find the gunk that you forgot was there.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about, and we're running out of time and I'm like, how is this possible? I feel like we've been talking for 5 minutes. But is breathwork and tarot. So I haven't actually done this with you, but I've seen that you do this. It was like breathwork circles focused around connecting with the energy of different archetypes in the tarot, right? Like the Fool, the High Priestess. And I do like embodied tarot yoga classes that are sort of a combination of a lot of different things. So I'm really curious about that for you and your tarot practice also, how that combines with breathwork.
Yeah. So, well, it started for me because, so I have two businesses, like I have my acupuncture practice and then I have like the work that I do, coaching work with people, that I do online from everywhere. And at first it was like, I had breathwork offerings and I had tarot offerings and I had coaching offerings. And I was like, this is silly because really all of these things need to be together because like my special sauce is how I weave them all together. And so then I decided to like get rid of all of my offerings and just have like one offering that's like a 90-minute session where, you know, the first 45 minutes are coaching. And, you know, sometimes that's going to be more on personal matters, maybe more on health matters, maybe more on business matters. It's like whatever you want to talk about. And then we use the tarot cards as like information during that coaching session. So I usually don't start with the cards. We usually start with coaching and then we'll like decide to pull some cards to help clarify some things. And then we'll use breath work to like let it all integrate is probably like the best way to say, like let the work that we had just done in the coaching session and with the tarot all integrate. And I really found that using those cards, both as clarifying of the coaching session, but also like setting intention for the breath work, was super powerful. And that was in my one-on-one session. So I was like, I want to bring this into more of like group thing. And I feel like you were saying, even when it's online, there really is this like group collective energy that happens. Mm-hmm. And so I started like playing around with themes for the breath work instead of just having it be like you're really generic, like what David teaches us of just like letting the body clear what it wants to clear. Sort of breath work, I would very intentionally bring things up that was working on different emotions or different intentions or themes. And I think that one of the things that breath work does better than anything else is it allows us to connect with higher sources. So whether it's our higher self or it's an ancestor or it's a spirit guide or an angel or whatever, like really, really forming connections with non-earthly folks. And so this idea of like tarot as basically as archetypes, I wanted us to be able to connect to these archetypes and really embody them in different ways. And so that's how I've been bringing it together.
I love that. I mean, you know, I love embodiment work and I just love seeing how everyone in the tarot community is doing such interesting and different things, like such unique and creative ways of like connecting with the cards and sharing the archetypes with other people. I'm really loving seeing that. And we're both doing Lindsay Mack's course, which I'm very excited about.
So yeah. Excited. And by the time that it airs, we're going to be like, what, halfway through it probably?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we'll report back. In the intro, I'll probably talk about it. I want to ask you two more things.
Yeah.
If we have time, I hope we have time.
We're good.
Okay, cool. I'm really curious about if there's a card that's your teacher at the moment. And yes. I also know that you were on Cosmic Cousins podcast talking about all of your Leo magic. And I'm like part of the way through that episode now. I'm obsessed with that podcast, but I haven't gotten to the panel yet. And so I wanted to talk to you also about sort of how you relate to being a Leo now that we've just left your season.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. So current teacher, like tarot teacher at the time is the Hermit, which I feel like is a constant teacher for me because the Hermit is my life card. But it is also my card of the year. So it's like double Hermit right now. And, you know, my podcast is called Health Fuels Hustle. And I firmly believe that our periods, our focus on our health and our self-care and our community care and allowance of rest is what gives us the strength and the creativity and all the things to like do the work that we're like putting out in the world. And the last couple years, you know, as I was in like a chariot year and then a strength year, they've been really intense years. Like I've put out a lot of work. I've been running retreats. I've been building new businesses. I've been like all of these things have been incredibly incredibly fortifying, but also incredibly stressful at different times. And I made this pact with myself, no new things for the rest of this year, like no new things at all. And it's hard because I'm someone that as a Leo, because I'm going to bring these two questions together.
Perfect, I love it.
As a Leo, I am very creative. I do have a lot of fire in me and I'm always wanting to like start new projects and bring people together. You know, Jeff who does the Cosmic Cousins podcast and who's a good friend and teacher of mine did his, that's how I first got into tarot, was through doing his Brooklyn Fools course several years ago. And he talks about like one of the qualities of soul centered Leo is, you know, bringing community together and with this creativity. And I feel like that's something that I very much embody as a Leo, because this idea of like, wanting the light shown on me all the time. Like, yeah, I can see it sometimes. Like I have a podcast and I like being on other people's and I like talking about myself. Like that's cool. But I also am like deathly afraid of like being on stage. Like there's no way that I would ever do an interview like live or anything like that. Like I feel very safe behind this computer screen here. So there's certain things of the Leo of like that overly flair for the dramatic that like none of that really feels aligned for me. But then when Jeff was talking about the soul-centered Leo, it's like, oh yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And so because I do have this like innate drive, but then also have this life card of the Hermit, not that the Hermit necessarily always is needs to be interpreted as like solitude or anything like that. Like the Hermit also is about using your own light to like light the path instead of other people's light. I have been trying to like hold space for both of those, like allow myself to like have the creativity that I want to have and have the community that I want to have and also like have the rest that I want to have too.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing. The Hermit is such a beautiful card too. I'm in a World/Empress year right now until October 19th. And that's feeling very good. And I like, don't want to leave it. I'm like, wait, no.
Oh, I can't wait till I'm in an Empress year again. That's going to be so delightful.
Oh yeah. It's been really delightful. Actually, everything you're saying about creativity, I feel like one of the things that Reiki specifically, but my spiritual practice in general has really unlocked for me is my creativity. Cause I feel like that was sort of stamped out of me when I was a kid and took a long time to return. And so I'm putting together this little embodiment class, which is probably going to be launching when this episode comes out, around with like breath work and tarot yoga practices all around like creativity and connecting with that flow.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love your Leo energy.
Thank you.
And the last question that I always ask on this podcast is, what does living open mean to you?
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I was listening to some of your other episodes. And I feel like every time I think of this question, I like have a different answer. So maybe that actually is my answer. Like the ability to be fluid and allow for change. That's actually something that's been really important to me lately. The idea of, not having things in pen, you know, being able to like be in pencil and to like change, you know, feeling okay with my own evolutions and change around my practice, as I talked about, like the decolonizing it and whatnot. As a business owner, I think it's really one of my strengths that I feel fluid around change and that like, it's not paralyzing to me to make a decision because I know if I don't like the way it turns out, I'll just change it the next time. So that actually feels really open to me, like a wide, vast span of possibility.
Yes, I love it. So where can people find you and work with you, and what are some of your offerings?
Yeah, so you can find me best on Instagram. It's just under my name, Amy Koretsky. On my website is amykoretsky.com. Basically, if you can figure out how to spell my last name, you can find me anywhere. And the ways to work with me, I have a Patreon page that is right now my favorite way to work with people. Since I believe in sliding scale models, I have a non-hierarchical Patreon page where from anywhere from $1 to $18 a month, you can support me. And then you get one live free group breathwork session a month. And then I've been doing these little weekly tarot scopes as well that I'm just starting to do. And then I record the breathwork groups for those that can't make it live. And I put it up as a audio so that if you missed it, you can do it at home on your own time. Or I've had people tell me that were like in group with me that they're like, that one was so powerful that I've listened to it like three more times since.
And oh, that, I like, love it.
It just makes my heart melt. So Other than that, I do one-on-one coaching with people, although I only take on one person at a time right now because I've been so busy with other things. And then I also do retreats, which right now I have one that by the time this airs, it'll have just finished. And I don't know when my next one will be because they take a lot of work. And so I'm going to take a rest for the rest of this week.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people can sign up for your newsletter, right? And they'll get a breathwork challenge, and they'll probably be able to find out about any retreats there, I assume.
Totally. Yeah. If you like want to dip your toe in the breathwork waters, but like don't want to, you know, really commit to anything, doing the 7-day free challenge is a good way to start.
And I did it and it was great. FYI, doll. Okay. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for everything that you shared. It was so nice to finally hang out.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Amy. If you haven't, we talked about Reiki a lot in this episode. So if you haven't listened to my Reiki 101 episode, that's the most recent one before this one. So you can listen to that. On Thursday, there's going to be an Ace of Pentacles deep dive episode coming out. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it. And one more thing. I mentioned a creativity class in this episode, and I'm going to be touching on creativity, I think, throughout the year and in the zine that I mentioned with rituals and practices and spells. So stay tuned for that. A little bit different than what I was talking about with Amy when we did this interview, but we recorded this a while ago when I was still fleshing out my ideas. I think that's all. Yeah, that's all. The links to all of Amy's information, her website, her Instagram, her Patreon, are all in the description. My links for Patreon, website, Instagram, all that stuff are in the description as well. Definitely check out Amy's Patreon if you love breathwork. I also have a breathwork recording, a Queen of Pentacles breathwork meditation on my site. So check out all the things and come back on Thursday for a deep dive into the Ace of Pentacles. Big, big love.